I hope everyone had a chance to rest up and recharge a little bit over the course of the past week, because we're about to get into deeper waters. Last Chabura, we saw the beginning of Siman Tzadi Aleph. And Pei Zayin, Pei Ches, Pei Tes, and the beginning of Tzadi Aleph are the laid out a lot of critical issues, a lot of critical concepts in Basar B'Chalav, as well as that was in Siman Pei Zayin, the definitions of Bishol and Basar and Chalav, and Pei Ches and Pei Tes. Peches and Peites, in a sense, are built off of the beginning of Tzadi Aleph. The opening Se'ifim of Tzadi Aleph are about the Issur Jerabanan of eating Basar and Chalav together, though not cooked together. So that's an Issur Jerabanan. There's no Nisin as Tam, but they're side by side. You have residue of one smeared on the other. That's an Issur Jerabanan. And that's the beginning of Siman Tzadi Aleph. And Peches and Peites had focused on some of the isur and drabanan, some of the harchakas are meant to prevent that. We don't eat basar and chalav side. You don't have basar and chalav side by side. That was in Peches. So in Peites is about the regulations that govern basar and chalav when you have one after the other, when they're side by side in time rather than side by side in place. The isur of ha'alah and the dinam of hamtana and of Natil Yisadayim, and cleansing your hands and cleansing your mouth. Those were a series of Diyun Rabbanan that laid the groundwork in many ways, practical Diyun Rabbanan, and Pei Zayin certainly laid the groundwork for the core dinim of Basar B'Chalav. What we're about to jump into is the, from I mentioned last time we learned, that there's a pyramid. That the central simanim, beginning with Tzadi Aleph to Tzadi Hey, are really built as sort of a pyramid. We're going to be stepping up, and then further on, we're going to be stepping down. We're going to be stepping up, beginning Tzadi Aleph, going into Tzadi Beis, in terms of how directly, increasing levels of how directly are the Basar and Chalav interacting with each other. Last time in the beginning of Tzadi Aleph, there was no transfer of flavor whatsoever, just they're one on top of the other or side by side. I'm going to move forward in the remainder of Tzadi Aleph into cases where there is Nisin Astam. The Basar and Chalav aren't just side by side, they're actually giving flavor to one another in various ways. And then we're going to step up even further in Siman Tzadi Beis to cases where they're mamash being cooked together, the most direct and the most extensive type of Nisin Astam, where there's full infusion of one into the other. And then, so that's sort of the going upside of the pyramid, from Tzadi Aleph to Tzadi Beis, increasing degrees of interaction, of intermingling of the Basar and the Chalav. And then we're going to begin to, on the other end of the pyramid, to step down to Tzadi Gimel, Tzadi Dal, and Tzadi Hey, in terms of how directly are how close are the Basar and Chalav to one another versus how remote are they. Tzadi Beis are talking cases where the Basar and Chalav being cooked together, and then I could gradually introduce more and more steps of degrees of separation. From a case at the top of the pyramid of the Basar and Chalav Mamash being cooked together to a case where you have one, let's say the flavor of the fleishiks doesn't go directly into the milchiks, but goes into food, which is then part of a food, which is then being eaten together with milchiks. So I have the potato from the fleishik chalent together with the cheese, or I have the pot from the fleishik chalent together with the cheese. I'm using a fleishik pot for milchiks. That's already a step or two removed. And then we're going to step down even further to cases where I'm not even using the fleishik pot with the cheese. I'm using the fleishik pot with the power of a food, and the power of a food is interacting with the cheese. That we'll get to at the far end of the pyramid, the other base, so to speak, of the pyramid, Siman Tzadi Hey, the dinam of Not Bar Not. And what we're up to from the middle of Tzadi Aleph and on is, as we say, going up and down the pyramid, but the fundamental concept that we're really going to be grappling with for the first time here and through most of the balance of bas mechalav is a concept of ta'am ke'ikr. This notion of absorption of flavor that halacha recognizes and values the absorption of flavor. So I want to tonight spend some time on a more general mavo to some of the issues of ta'am ke'ikr. And to do that, as the Maram Kamas gave out 2 weeks ago indicate, actually turn our attention for tonight from Simin Sari Alf to Simin Sari Ches. Bas B'chalav in Yaradeya, in Turin Shulchan Aruch, Bas B'chalav ranges from Simin Pei Zayin, where we began, to Simin Sari Zayin, 11 Simanim. And Simin Sari Ches is the first Simin after Bas B'chalav, the first Simin Hilchas Ta'arobas. And in the opening lines of Hilchas Ta'arobas, you get the global introduction to issues of tam, to issues of nesiyas tam, to issues of infusions of flavor. But let's take a step back, because the idea of tam kekere appears explicitly in the Tanaim, in Mishnayos, in a number of places. And there are two Mishnayos in particular in Masachet Chulin that draw our attention. There's a Mishnah in Masachas Psachim that draws our attention. There are Mishnayos as well in Trumas and in Shvias, and various places throughout Shas. Let's take a look here, and let's begin with Masachas Chulin. So a Mishnah that we will be returning to, and a Mishnah that's going to be the basis. We already had a chance to peek at it, and a Mishnah that's going to be the basis for Simin Sadi Beis is the Mishnah in our Perek and Perek Kol Habasa, the Mishnah Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. And the Mishnah tells us, here Kuf Ches Amud Aleph Maseches Chulin, Tipas Chalav, the sugya of Tipas Chalav, the drop of milk. Tipas Chalav Shenafal HaChaticha, the drop of milk that falls on the piece of meat. So I have a pot of meatballs, I have a pan of roasts, a big powder pan of fleishiks, pieces of meat, and then a drop of milk falls on one of the pieces. A drop of milk falls on one of the roasts. A drop of milk falls on one of the meatballs. So now the Mishnah begins to discuss, so how far is the milk spreading? Is the milk only spreading throughout that one piece, or do I already assume that the milk spreads throughout the entire pot, all the pieces and all of the gravy? The Mishnah says, Tipas chalav shenafal achaticha, a drop of milk falls on a piece of meat in a pot. So if there's enough milk to give flavor to that piece of meat, so then that piece of meat is aser. In other words, the milk spreads throughout that one piece of meat. Near as hakadera, if you didn't just leave it as a static situation, but you stirred the pot, so then im yesh ba benosin tam ba'osa kadera aser. Then it's not just a question of, isn't there enough milk to give flavor to that one piece of meat? Enough milk to give flavor to the entire pot full of meat? Because if you're stirring, we're assuming that the flavor is going to spread and be diluted throughout. See, here we're ready. We'll come back to the details of this Mishnah when we get to Simin Sadi Beis and Mirtz Hashem. That's going to be the focus of Simin Sadi Beis. But for now, certainly some of the concepts that emerge is there is an assumption of Tam Ke'ikr. There is an assumption that flavor matters. And there is an assumption that flavor is going to spread. That flavor is going to spread if in the presence of heat. Heat is the engine. Is the vector. Heat is the method of time transfer. It's not the only one, but it's certainly the dominant one. And here it's heat. So if you have a hot pot on the fire, the milk falls into the meat. So the heat is going to spread. Is going to cause the milk flavor to get absorbed throughout the meat, and then you have to figure out, is it giving flavor or not? And that way the Mishnah tells you that's the key issue. I don't just say, well, there's some milk, so it's a problem. Nor do I say, well, it's batel berov, there's less milk than meat, so it's batel berov. No, it has to do with, is there flavor or not? And that idea of benos and tam appears as well, as I said, another Mishnah in Chulin. Let's step back to the previous parak, the parak Gid HaNosha. The Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Vav. Mishnah on Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. This parak is, as the title indicates, about the Isser of Gid HaNasha, a din that already appears in Parsha VeYishlach, and it's saying it's the first halacha of Kashrus It appears explicitly in Chumash. And every kosher animal contains within it this treifa item. You have the gid hanasha in the hindquarters, so that it needs to be removed, so you don't eat the gid hanasha. You can't eat the gid hanasha, so you have to remove it from hindquarter meat before you eat the meat. And then not only before you eat the meat, but the Mishnah says, yerech, you have to even remove it before you cook it. Yerech, the Mishnah says, Sarif Alam Beis, yerech shen is bashal ba gid hanasha. I have a piece, the hip, the thigh of the animal. I have a piece of hindquarter. I think the perhaps the term is a flank. I have the hindquarters of the animal. So if I cooked it before I removed the gid hanasha, before I trebered, is the Yiddish word, or before I did nikur, before I removed, extracted the gid hanasha, I cooked it with the gid still in. So the Mishnah says, well, the gid hanasha is aser anyhow. But now that I cooked them together, the meat, surrounding meat may become forbidden as well. Once again, the Mishnah says that the deciding dispositive question is, does it give flavor? If there's enough gid to give flavor to the surrounding meats, then the meat itself becomes aser as well. Now, what this Mishnah adds, that doesn't appear explicitly in the Mishnah Gav Kuf Ches, is the Mishnah goes on to say, okay, it's a Misharanos. How do you assess this? How do you evaluate? How do you calculate it? Number one, the Mishnah is making it clear that Beno Saint Tam, to be Beno Saint Tam, is a question of calculation. Is there enough or is there not enough? The Mishnah makes it explicit by saying we need to calculate it. And the Mishnah addresses, how do you calculate it? Ketzad Misharanosa. So the Mishnah answers, Kibas or Belefis. Well, you imagine that you had a piece of meat the size of the gid hanasha cooking together with vegetables in the volume of the surrounding meat. The basar is in place of the gid, and the lefes is in place of the basar hayerach. You figure out if that would be enough to give flavor, so that's considered to be benosin tam. That's considered to be benosin tam. So that's interesting. So now already this mission on Tayyavav begins again some of the details of implementation. And the Gemara digs even deeper, and no pun intended, into some of the details of implementation. So the first point which the Gemara raises, which we're going to come back to in Mitzvah Shem next week, when we return to sort of the details of Siman Sadi Aleph, just an opening line, you see Shmuel already raises the issue of Lo Shano. There are different ways for heat to spread flavor. It could be Nisbashel versus Nitzla. Are you cooking or are you grilling? And Shmuel says, if you're cooking, so then the flavor spread, the gid will spread throughout the piece of meat. If you're grilling, if it was nitzla, then kolef va'ochel. Then you just have to peel away the layer of meat that immediately surrounds it. So that's a race. So we'll put that on the side for now. But one of the questions we're going to be thinking about is how far is flavor spreading? The Mishnah and Kuf Ches of Tipos Chalav and the Mishnah and Tzarivav of Ger Asha, we are both assuming that the flavor of the Isser, the Ganasha, spreads throughout the piece of meat. The flavor of the Tipas Chalav spreads throughout the piece of meat, or perhaps even the pot of meat. That's Mispashet Bekulo. But Shmuel, the Amora, is telling us, well, it's not always the case. Depends on how the flavor is being transferred. Sometimes it spreads Bekulo, but sometimes it only spreads to the first layer. In which case, it would be enough just to peel away that first layer and of the formerly kosher piece of meat. The flavor only penetrate a little bit to take away the first klipa, and the rest of it is kosher. So here, that's a comment of the Amor Shmuel. In Psachim, it's already alluded to in a Mishnah, one of the most central sugyas outside of Chulin in terms of the details of Tam Ke'ikar, appears in Maseches Psachim. I think the Daf Yomi is almost up to it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Ayin Hey, the Mishnah Hey Medeis, and the Gemara and Daf Ayin Vav. And we will be getting back to this again in terms of the details when we return in coming weeks to Siman Sadi Aleph. But for now, just take a peek at the Mishnah on Ayin Hey Medeis. The Mishnah The Mishnah, it gets involved in issues of tam transfer in the context of the halachas of Karban Pesach. Here we are, Parakeet Tzatzolin, the seventh parak of Psachim. Again, Ayin Heim, it bays the bottom of Ayin Heim, it bays the Maseches Psachim. So the Prakim, as you know, Prakim He through Tes are the five Prakim of Psachim that are about the Kachem Dinim, about the halachas of Karban Pesach. So in the third of those five Prakim, Parakeet Tzatzolin, the seventh parak of Maseches Psachim, opens with a focus on how do you grill, now that you've yeshechted the Karban Pesach, and you did the avoda in the Azara, now you bring it back home, and now you're going to grill it. How do you go about grilling the Karban Pesach? So it tells us in Parashas Bo, we learned it 2 weeks ago, that it has to be Tzli'esh. You cannot cook the meat of the Karban Pesach, nor can you even dry heat it. You cannot grill it using anything other than direct heat of the fire. The Mishnah says if the Karban Pesach is going to fall against the oven walls, that's going to be a problem, because then that one piece of meat of the Karban Pesach that touched the hot oven wall is baking from the wall heat of the oven wall rather than just grilling from the broiling from the heat of the fire, and that is treif. That's a pasul. You're not allowed to eat it. Now what's interesting is the Mishnah here already begins to talk about different thicknesses. The Mishnah says, "Noga b'charso shel tanur yiklof es mekomo." If the part of the animal, the Karban Pesach that you're broiling, if it ends up accidentally falling against the inner wall of the oven, yiklof es mekomo. Once again, klipa. You have to take off the first peel because we're not assuming that the heat is baking everything, but the heat of the oven wall that's in contact with is going to bake the first peel. Then the Mishnah says, "But if there were juices." If there was some of the drips of the juices of the Karban Pesach drip off of the animal onto the oven wall, then ricochet back. Notaf may rotbo al acheres. Some of the fluid comes off of the Karban Pesach, falls on the wall, sort of falls downward sideways onto the wall of the oven, then bounces back and hits the bottom of the Karban Pesach. Chazrei lav yitolas makomo. So that liquid is no longer kosher because that liquid of the Karban Pesach got baked for a moment from the heat of the wall itself. And then when it bounces back, it's going to make treif the area right around where it bounces back. But not just a klipa, netila. Klipa is just a thin peel. Netila already is around an inch thick. So the Mishnah in Psachim. And the Mishnah of Psachim is laying out this notion. Sometimes, as the Mishnah tells us in Chulin, flavor spreads throughout, but sometimes it only spreads to just the first inch or so, kedei netila, and sometimes the flavor will just spread even less, kedei klipa, the first peel. The Mishnah itself in Psachim goes on to talk about that as well. The Mishnah says, what happens if you smeared you basted the raw Karban Pesach with oil that's not kosher for all Jews? You have shemen shel truma. You have truma oil, which kohanim are permitted to eat, but non-kohanim, levim yisraelim, may not eat. And now you basted the Karban Pesach with that oil. So the Mishnah says, if all the members of your chabur are kohanim, that's great. But if some of them are non-kohanim, you have to, once again, klipa. You have to take off the outer peel because the oil of the truma got absorbed into that first peel. So we're seeing from all three Mishnayos, the notion of Tam Ke'ikar, the Tanam are very clearly, as I mentioned, there are Mishnayos throughout Seder Zerah and elsewhere as well. I speak about the idea of Tam Ke'ikar, that we're concerned with absorption of flavor, and specifically the Mishnayos are stressing both the Mishnah in Kal HaBasar and the Mishnah in Gin HaNashen, the 8th and 7th Prakim of Chulin, that's Beno Sein Tam. The question is there enough that it's tasteable? Enough that it's tasteable. You have to figure out how far the flavor went, but once you calculate how far the flavor went, just the first peel, the first inch, or throughout the whole piece, or throughout the whole pot, then you have to start calculating, was there enough flavoring agent that it's not diluted, that it's been no same tam. So that's where this idea of tam ke'ikar is. That's this idea of tam ke'ikar already appears in a number of Mishnais. Now, question.
Sorry, this is a very, very basic question, but one thing I never understood about the concept of pump kicker and Kleepa is why don't you say that he keeps advancing? That so in the first example of a milk falls on the meatball and meatball is in the pot, why don't you say, okay, now the meatball is Buster Bacalov, and now you have Buster Bacalov mixing with your non-Buster Bacalov, and now you have to measure whether the Buster Bacalov imparted taste to everything else in the pot.
That's a great question.
Same thing by...
You're asking why you always assume the flavor just keeps spreading and spreading and spreading and spreading. So I think we're going to see that more once again to the details later in Sadi Alf and certainly in Sadi Beis and Tipas Chalav and the cooking issue. We'll see more of that. But it may well be a little asymptotic. In other words, depending on what we're definitely seeing from thinking about these issues a little bit, there is absorption of time. One of the issues that we're going to again see more and more of is there are different engines to drive. Time transfer doesn't happen on its own. And that was the beginning of Tzadi Alf. Just because they have cold cheese on top of cold meat, you know, just because they're touching doesn't mean there's going to be absorption of flavor. They're just touching, two cold items touching, they're just going to, there'll be surface contact, there'll be surface residue, but that's it. There's no absorption of flavor. I need to have some engine, some method that's driving the flavor in. Again, the most common one is heat that we've already seen, and we're going to see more in Tzadi Alf about maliach and about kavush or other ways of pickling and salting, other ways for, but there has to be some vector, there has to be some force that's driving the flavor in. So let's say if you have a force that's only driving the flavor in, a weaker force, it's only driving the flavor into the first klipa, so does that mean it goes in and it sort of settles? There may be a drop that goes further, but it's really going to be entirely diluted at that point. It's really going to be the sort of asymptotic drop-off. But it's going to be concentrated in that first klipa. So that first klipa is going to have enough that it's been osein tam. Whereas if you have a stronger engine, you know, cooking in liquid, cooking in a pot, like the Mishnah on Kuvches, the Mishnah of Tipas Chalav, the focus of Siman Tzadi Beis, so then already you assume that the flavor is spreading equally throughout, and therefore, either it's more chamar or it's more kal. Right? Either there's enough milk to give flavor to everything in the pot, which because everything is treif, not just the first klipa, or on the other hand, this is sort of the irony, sometimes it can end up being a spreading further could be a cooler rather than a chumra, because if it's evenly spread throughout the whole pot and there is not enough milk to give flavor to everything in the pot, so then everything is kosher. So that's really the question. Is there a strong enough engine? What's the engine that's driving the tom transfer? Is there a strong enough engine to move it evenly throughout? Or it's not. If it's malicha, let's say, then you just assume that's the first appeal. That the flavor isn't, nothing's really there to move the flavor forward.
If milk falls into just one meatball, I have one meatball sitting in a little Tupperware container, and milk falls in it, and it's time. And then I put that meatball with milk in it in my fridge, and then it falls into, you know, another three meatballs. And then those other three meatballs fall into another six meatballs. You know, like, so if you keep imagining that you're continuing the transfer of taste, doesn't that ultimately spread throughout the whole pot?
So let me address this a little bit. But what you're to address fully what you're talking about, we will in Mirat Hashem do when we get to Siman Tzadi Beis. To address what you're talking about fully is going to get us some of the central concepts in the thick of things. Chaticha Nasas Nevela. We will get there in Mirat Hashem. But this case that you gave, I cook, the milk falls into one hot meatball on the fire. Milk falls in and it suffuses the meatball. Right? Okay, so now this meatball is treif, Bas B'chal. I put it in the fridge. Right. And then I take out next day, and I take that cold treifa meatball, that basta b'chal of meatball, that milk and meatball, and I throw into a pot of 20 other meatballs. Right. So you are right that now we have a second episode of time transfer, and now we're going to have to think about how much flavor that treifa meatball is giving to all the kosher meatballs. And I may end up with 21 treifa meatballs. But kol zman, with them, again, I don't want to get too deep into this yet. But kol zman, that you're, what the Mishnah appears to say, that you're right, the implication of the Mishnah on Kuf Ches, which we began tonight, of Tipas Chalov, is that flavor doesn't always spread throughout the whole pot. Sometimes that whatever is going on in this scenario, we'll have to get to the details. That's the sugya of Tipas Chalav, is only enough to push it through the first piece of meat. And if as long as the situation remains steady, there's no force that's pushing it beyond. If you then stir it subsequently, or take it out, you put it back in, okay. So then maybe, you know, in the new scenario, we'll have to reassess. But again, that's going to be a lot of what we're going to be thinking about in Sadi Alf and Sadi Beis is going to be, is what are the forces that create tam transfer, Bishol, Maliach, and Kavash, and so on and so forth. And we're going to have to assess figure out for each one, how far does it push the flavor? And as you said before, how far pushes the flavor, this brings us back to the core issue, how far pushes the flavor can be either a kula or a chumra. If it only pushes a little bit, so there's only a little bit of the formerly kosher food which is vulnerable, but on the other hand, that little bit of the first peel is definitely going down. There's no way that the tam coming is diluted in just a peel. If the flavor is spreading broadly, so there's a lot that's susceptible, there's a whole pot full of meat now that's at risk. On the other hand, it has a greater chance of pulling through because, again, you have to have enough milk flowing in to give flavor not just to the first layer, but to the whole piece of meat or to the whole pot of meat. That's gonna be some of the dynamic that we're gonna see unfolding here. Now,
what about the reverse option? Why can't you neutralize the taste? Let's say you add hot sauce to something, so you can't taste the milk anymore because you can taste. There's a stronger taste you can add to it. Does that neutralize tam k'ikar once you eliminated the taste? Or not really?
That's a good question. Things like that definitely do work. Things like that will work more often with flavor absorbed into kale. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves, which is great. Things like that work more frequently with.
I understand the meatball, maybe not, but if a pot of soup, a drop of milk falls into a pot of soup, well, then you could probably neutralize that taste of the little milk with adding a bunch of spices or something. Like, you can easily neutralize that.
Yeah, so that too brings us to Siman Sadi Beis. Efshar Lasachto and Efshar Lafrido. Let's say I could remove some of the milk. Milk fell into the chicken soup. Enough milk fell into the chicken soup to make a treif. But how about if I could remove some of the milk? Either I'll add more soup or I'll remove some milk so that I change the dilution ratio. Is that going to now make it kosher or are we locked in? That's actually somewhat related to the issue that Glenn had raised with the two-step dance of the meatballs. First the one meatball, then the other meatball fell into others. So when we get to Siman Sadi Beis, we're definitely going to have to... Baruch Hashem, looks like we're going to have a freilich time in Siman Sadi Beis. Let's recap where we are, and I want to talk about one other issue. So we see so far from the Mishnayos, certainly the Tanam were assuming that when flavor is absorbed into something else, it can create Isser. And specifically, and as we see from the Gemara and Sadi Vav and the Mishnah and Psachim, that we have to, and it's also the discussion in the Mishnah Kuv Ches, you have to figure out how far tam is transferred. It's not just a binary issue of tam is or isn't transferred. Sometimes tam is not transferred at all. That was last Chabura's discussion, where everything is cold. When tam is transferred, one issue to think about is how far is it spreading. But then the other issue to think about is there tam or isn't there tam? Is it benosin tam or is it not? The ketzad misharin osa. So the truth is like this. When you open up Hilchos Taruvos, as I said before, it's the opening topic, Siman Sadi Ches. So Siman Sadi Ches Sif Beis talks about the concept of Tam Kikar in concept. Where does it come from? And again, those are learning Daf Yomi. The Gemara has several sugyas, most notably in Psachim and Nazir. As I learned, Daf Yomi saw this not long ago. The sugya Mem Dalad Mem Hey in Maseches Psachim. Go on to know, where does Tam Kikr come from? Does it come from? Where in the Chumash do you find Tam Kikr? Do you learn from Basar B'Chalav? Or do you learn it from the fact that the Torah tells you in Parshas Matos? If you get kalim from a nachri, you have to kasher. So obviously, we're worried about the flavor in the kalim. And or is the psukim parsha savna kasher and kalim? And maybe it's somewhere else. There was a long, long, long discussion, long shock of Atariya. What is the makar for Tam Kikr? So that, and interestingly, is not the first topic in Hilchos Taruvos. That's Sif Beis. Sitzari Ches Sif Beis, the long Beis Yosef. He discusses the discussions among the Rishonim. How does this all land? Clearly, we hold the Tam Kikr. That's Mavur in Mishnayos. But is it Daraisa? Is it Drabanan? The Gemara gave a number of different drushes, but the Gemara also had a kashan in each of the drushes. So the question is, when everything lands, is it Daraisa? Is it Drabanan? So that's a fascinating discussion. But that's Sif Beis. I actually want to focus for the last couple of minutes instead on Sif Aleph. Rather on the Makar, is it Daraisa, is it Drabanan? If it's Daraisa, is it a Lav or is it a Asay? Meaning, does it actually become, if it's Daraisa, does that mean that that the Tam of Chazir is the same as the actual Lav of Chazir? Or is it, no, the Torah, it's like a lower level. And maybe an Isser Klali, a general Isser of Tam Ke'ikar. Or even if it's considered to be a violation of Chazir, it's a lesser level. So that's a big debate amongst Rishonim. If you're interested, the Beis Yosef, again, Beis Yosef, Tzadi Chesiv Beis, is a extensive, quotes extensively from various Rishonim on that. Tam Ke'ikar Daraisa Drabanan, a Lav or not a Lav, Klali Prati. And I want to turn our attention instead to sit to the topic of Sif Aleph, which is what we began to talk about already, which is the question not of the makar of Tam Ke'ikar, but the implementation of Tam Ke'ikar. And that really begins with the Mishnah that we just looked at in Chulin Sarivav, Ketzad Misharon Osa. So the Gemara goes on to have a fascinating discussion. The Gemara tells a story in Sadi Zayim and Aleph of the Kilchis Be'ilfis, which only rhymes if you're an Ashkenazi. Kilchis be'ilfis, some treifa seafood in a pot of meat. I don't know, they put some shrimp into a meat dish or something like that. Kilchis be'ilfis. The Gemara says, other cases, but here, Rav and Baravad said the discussion was Kilchis be'ilfis in the middle of Tzadi Zayim and Alf. The Astra Shailul Rabbi Yechana, and they came to ask Rabbi Yechana, what's it din? They have a little bit of shrimp, a little bit of lobster, whatever this kilchas was. Rashi said some sort of treifa seafood. It fell into the pot of flesh. So they asked Rav Yechon, is it, do you have to throw out everything or not? So Amar Lahu, Lita Mekfela, Arma, go have a non-Jewish chef taste it and let him see if the meat tastes like lobster. I can't taste the meat. Maybe it's taka treif. How do I know? We have to see what it tastes like. So have a non-Jewish chef taste it. He has no isser. He's not Jewish. He has no isser against eating the lobster or eating tom of lobster. And he'll let us know whether there's a tom or not. If he tells us a tom, it's a problem. If not, then not. And then the Gemara goes on to quote from several generations later, the Amora Rava. Rava says, "May Reish have a kakasha. I used to have a kasha. There is a brisa which appears here and appears in Kalabasar and appears in Zvachim. A brisa that's going to be central as we move deeper into Siman Sari Gimel and on in Basar B'Chalav. Keder Shabish Basalei Vashar B'Chalav. You have a pot that you had used for cooking meat, you cannot cook milk in it. This is a makar for having two sets of pots. But not only can't I have tom transfer from the meat to the milk directly, but even via the pot. And the brisa says, and let's say you did. Let's say I accidentally used a fleshik pot with milchiks or vice versa, and in bisho, but no Saint Tom. You have to figure out, did it give flavor or not? I have mac and cheese that I made in a fleshik pan. If it tastes fleshik, then it's treif. If it doesn't taste fleshik, then it's kosher. Truma, I shouldn't have done it, but the food remains kosher. And then the Braisa goes on to say it's not just milchus and fleishiks. If I have truma and chulin, truma, which is only permissible to tahar kohanim, I have a truma kli lo yivasha v'chulin. You shouldn't cook the non-truma, the regular food for Yisraelim in the truma kli. V'imbisha b'no sintam. If you did, so then you have to figure out, does it give flavor or not? Imagine in a kohen, in the days of Beis HaMikdash, a kohen's kitchen had many sets of pots. You talk about having like milchus and fleishiks and for chametz dik and then for pesach dik, milchus and fleishiks. Imagine if you multiply that by two again, because you have to have the milchik truma and the milchik chulin, the fleishik truma and the fleishik chulin, and then pesach, it could get complicated. Anyhow, so the Braisa talks both about milchus and fleishiks kelim and about truma and chulin kelim. But the Braisa spoke at b'dieved, you have to figure out how it tastes. The Rava said, I was always bothered. Bishlam a truma. How do you know how it tastes? A truma tamla kohen. I'll ask the kohen to taste this. Does it taste like truma or not? Because he's allowed to eat both truma and chulin. But the bas b'chal of man tamle. Which Jew am I asking to taste it? I says, oh, the Rava said, but now that I heard Rabbi Yechon's psach, Hashem Rabbi Yechon, Samchina Kfeila Amar, Rabbi Yechon told us you're allowed to rely on the non-Jewish chef. Okay? So Achanami, Samchina Kfeila Amar. So that's what that Braisa means. In Bisho B'no Sein Tam. That's what these Mishnayos mean. B'no Sein Tam of the Gid Anasha. No Sein Tam of the Basar and Chalv. And the Gemara goes on to quote that Rava, in a different context, put this idea very pithily. Amar Rabbanan B'tayma, from Sai Zayim and outside Zayim Beis. Amar Rabbanan B'Kfeilot, Amar Rabbanan B'Shishim. Sometimes Chazal speak about flavor. And that's, as Rashi points out, here you have these Mishnayos that we looked at. Sometimes the Chacham talk about having a non-Jewish chef taste it. That's Rabbi Yochanan. V'amar Rabbanan, in option three, B'shishim. Sometimes the Chacham speak about Batal B'shishim. So which one is it? Are you having a Jew taste it? Are you having the non-Jew taste it? Or are you just doing the math? Just to calculate the volume and see if you have bitul b'shishim or not. So Rava goes on to see that the answer is it depends on the case. Min b'shein amino deheteira, there are two different flavors and they're both kosher, like the truma and the chulin, so then b'taimah, you have a Jew taste it. Or milchiks and parah, have a Jew taste it. The isura, if it's a flavor which is forbidden, then you have to have a kveila. Then you have to have a non-Jewish chef come and taste it. And if it's min b'mino, if they have the same flavor, or you don't have a kefela around, so then you don't have access to the non-Jewish chef, so then you have to do shishim. So in principle, what emerged from the Gemara is that really, the Mishnah say b'no sein tam, because that's really what it's about. Really, you should be tasting it. The shishim, we think talk about bitul b'shishim all the time. That's a backstop. That's a rule of thumb. If you cannot directly assess the flavor, either because the kosher and the treif have the same flavor, the midrabanan we still require this degree of bittul, or because it's a treif of flavor, I don't have a neighboring non-Jewish chef to come by and taste. So then you rely on shishim. And the idea of shishim is that the Chazal looked at the typical kitchen foods, and the shishim is always safe in terms of bittul. In other words, depending on what two foods you're mixing, sometimes it could be really that 1 in 20 would be diluted enough. Sometimes 1 in 40 would be diluted enough. Once you get to 1 in 60, so that unless you're dealing with flavor concentrates or spices or extracts, 1 in 60 you know that you're safe. So if you cannot directly check for flavor, so then you go with shishim. Now, it's interesting, we might be thinking, I think everyone who's, I don't know who's listening to this recording later on, I think everyone who's live in the shiur right now is an Ashkenazi, as far as I know, I could be wrong. Certainly, if you're Ashkenazi, to Ashkenazi ears, the sugya is like a little curious, because we hear about shishim all the time. Who ever heard of it? Having someone taste it? Mishama kazot, having someone taste it. Having someone taste it. So how come we never heard of this? So the answer is, because if you open up Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, Din the Ramah says we don't do this. Shulchan Aruch says the opening lines of Siman Tzariches Sifav, the very beginning of Hilchos Taruvos. Shulchan Aruch says the Isser Shenas Arav Beheter, a treifa food falls into kasher food or challah falls into basar. It says the opening line in Hilchos Taruvos, Yita Menu Goy, have a non-Jew taste it. If he says he doesn't taste any milk, so then the Jews can eat it. But if he does taste the milk, then it's a problem. Then the Ramah says, Shulchan Aruch gets involved some more of the details. Then the Ramah says, in the Eino Gemachshav L'smocha Goy, Mishar HaKol B'Shishim. Ramah says, quoting the Agur, the other late Ashkenazi Rishonim, no, our minhag is we don't rely on Te'imas Goy, we always insist on Shishim, which is utterly shocking. What does that mean? Oh, the Gemara said you rely, Mishnayis, B'no Saint Tam. But no, Saint Tom. So the Mishnah itself did already. The Mishnah itself did indicate that sometimes we're going to be Mishaer, sometimes we're going to calculate, and that's an allusion to this Bittel B'Shishim. Baster B'Lefes is Echad B'Shishim. Okay, but the Mishnah at their core say, but no, Saint Tom. As Rava pointed out, no Saint Tom means you're actually tasting it. So what do you mean? And the Rava was very clear that when you have a Kfela, you use a Kfela. If you don't have a Kfela, so that you don't have anyone to taste it, then you do a Shishim. So as Rav just say, we ignore the Gemara. We always do step. We always do the last resort. Why? It's always explicit. Well, what's going on? What's going on? So they're very, very fascinating for Kiveka. And we'll close with this. Kiveka says, "Let me explain to you how could it be that the Ashkenaz are more machmer than the Gemara, or we're not firmer than the Amoron?" So Rekiv Eger says it's not that we're chas v'shalom, we're not firmer than the Amoraim. But what the problem is that we're not sure about something that the Amoraim did know about. And that's what gets in the way. In principle, we would love to use Kfela. The problem is that for us, it's not practical. Well, what do you mean the problem is that for us, it's not practical? So Rekiv Eger says, you know, there's a discussion in Rishonim. If you go back to Tzadi Ches Amar Aleph, Tzadi Zion, Amaralf. And the Gemara speed introduces this idea of the Kfela. Rabbi Yochanan says Kfela, then Rava quotes Kfela. So how come so Rashi and Tosas both are address the fact that normally a Nachri does not have Ne'emanus in the world of Isser V'Heter. The fact that a Nachri tells that an individual who's not obligated to follow these dinim is doesn't have Ne'emanus to tell me about the dinim. He tells me the food is kosher, I can't rely on it. So how come all of a sudden here, you're relying on the kefela? It's really surprising. Well, where does this Ne'emanus come from? So both Rashi and Tosas are bothered by this question, but they give different answers. Rashi says, Dimas Lita me kefela, here it's again, Tzadi Zayim Alpha Mesechus Chulin, Lita me kefela, Rashi says, Nachtom over kochav, a non-Jewish baker, that's a translation of the word kefela. The Ashmu'in and the Mutul is Mochal. The Rabbi Yochanan is being Mechadesh, telling us the Chiddush, you're allowed to rely on him. Lefi Tumo, if he's speaking innocently. V'lo Yodi Uhu Shetrichim Lo L'Dvar Isser V'Heter. Don't tell him that there's halachic significance. Have a casual conversation. Say, hey, I was making the kitchen. I'd love to get your take. What do you, why don't you try it? What do you think? It has to be a casual conversation. And that's the idea, and that there are sources elsewhere in Shas for the notion of Messiah Lefi Tumo. The Sugi and Yavamas and elsewhere, that sometimes there's added Ne'emanus to an aid if he doesn't realize that what he's saying has halachic significance. He just made a casual comment that sometimes could allow us to rely on a Nachri in particular in situations where otherwise we would not. If he knew that it mattered, so then he might tilt things, maybe even well-meaning. It may be nefarious or it may be well-meaning. He feels bad that it's going to be usher for us, so he wants to do us a favor and tell us that it's kosher. We can't rely on that. So if his Messiah Lefi Tumo, if he's just having a casual conversation, doesn't recognize his halachic significance, then he's more believable. That's what Rashi says. It's kefela works because he's Messiah Lefi Tumo. Tosus, on the other hand, one of the shortest Tosus on the Amud, I think the shortest, Samchinan, Dir Basel Samchinan. Ava Gavda the Akumu Tos says he has Ne'emanus despite the fact that he's not Yisrael. Why? Kevin to kefela hu lamashai, because he's a kefela, because he's a baker. Why baker? So according to Rashi, a baker, that's just, you know, that was the scenario. If Yerchin said, oh, go ask the baker. Tos says, no, he's Neman because he's a baker. Kevin to kefela mashakash lo yafsidu umnaso. He doesn't want to ruin his professional reputation. Uman lo mara umnase. If his professional reputation is at stake, so that's going to add to his believability. It's not just a personal a taste test between friends. You're asking him as, you know, a gastronomical professional. You're the baker in town. You're the chef in town. We value your sensory capacity. Do you detect high notes of milk in this meat dish or not? So you have a baker, you have a wine test, you have someone who's a professional taste person. So then, uman l'marum nasa. That's what Tosa says. Now, if you look around, so the Rashba discusses this also, and his chidushim, he tilts towards Tosfos that it's uman l'marum nasa. In the Taurus Habayis, Rashba seems to say either one works. They're both good. Mesiach Levi Tumo will give him the boost of Nemanus, or Uman Omar Rasek. That will give him the boost of Nemanus. And then the Rambam doesn't mention any of this. The Rambam talks about Timus Kvel, he does not indicate he need Uman Omar, that he has to be an Uman. He says a Nachri, doesn't insist on the Kefela, that apparently Rambam thinks was just the example. That was the instance that happened days of Yechem, it's not the part of the Din. And he also does not insist that you don't tell him. The Or Sameach explains there must be a third factor for the Rambam. It's not Uman L'Amar Umnasa, it's not Mesiach L'Futumo, it's the factor of Milsa Davida L'Galuye. Also Gemara is in Yevamos and elsewhere. That someone who does not have sufficient Ne'emanus will have more Ne'emanus if he knows that we're going to soon find out the truth. And especially here, it's Avida L'Galuye Miyad. He's tasting it, we're going to taste it right afterwards. So there's very little incentive to be untruthful. That's a very strong version of Milsa Davida Legalui. So again, we have three possible explanations for the Nemanus of the Kfeh, the Nemanus of the Nachri. Rashi says it's Mesiach Lefitumo, Tosa says it's Umul Amarum Nase. The Rashba discusses which of the two or both should we accept. And the Rambam doesn't mention either. The Or Sameach suggests the Rambam is based on the third concept of Milsa de Avida Legaluye. We're going to soon find out the facts independent of this witness. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, so how do we paskin the halacha? Because if you look in Shulchan Aruch, let's turn back to Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, the Mechaber says, Yitamenu Goy, says you rely on the Kfeilah. And then he says, you got to make sure that he doesn't realize that we are relying on him. So Shem Mechaber Paskins, like Rashi, has to be Siach Lefi Tumo. Rabbi Kiva Eiger suggests that, he says, maybe the reason why the Ramah is Machir is because we're not sure which one it is. We're not sure whether we should be following Rashi or Tosfos. And sort of the opposite of the Rashba, who felt that either one works, Kiviger thinks maybe the Ramah holds that it's one or the other. It's either Rashi or it's Tosis, and we're not sure which one to paskin like. And here's the key chap of Kiviger. You can't have both simultaneously. You got to bite the bullet. Because if you think about it for a moment, either he realizes that you care or he doesn't realize that you care. So if he realizes that you care, then it's not Mesiach Lefi Tumo. If he doesn't realize that you care, then even if he's an Uman, you can't necessarily assume the Uman Amar Umnase, because he doesn't realize that we're having a professional conversation. To have Uman, to activate Tosis as Uman Amar Umnase, he has to know that you care. This is a serious discussion, this is a serious question, I need your professional opinion. Once I say you need a professional opinion, you're going to satisfy Tosis, you're not going to satisfy Rashi. This is no longer casual Mesiach Lefi Tumo. If it's casual,
maybe,
That's not going to be Lulam Nase. Yeah.
Maybe you care just from a tasting perspective.
It could be. It could be. Right. So again, Rebbe Yeager is making an assumption. You could have said he doesn't realize that it matters halachically, but still maybe he would keep up his professional reputation even in casual personal conduct. It could be. It could be.
Professional conduct, not halachic, but professional. Like, it's a restaurant critic. You want to know if there's flavors of...
Zabars. Yeah. And again, the question is, and I also get to the question of Masiach, where we draw the line Masiach Lefitumo. Kineger is definitely a bit of a chiddush. And look, you also could have brought in two people. You could bring in two tasters. You bring in a professional, you tell him we care, and then you bring in another guy, professional or not, you don't tell him that we care. That would have worked in principle, but because of the complexity, obviously, of pulling that off, so the Kineger would say, the minig develops among Ashkenazim, because you can't, we want to satisfy both Rashi and Tosfos, and to satisfy Rashi and Tosfos is not a simple matter. So the minhag developed that we don't get involved in kafela at all, because we want to be yotzei l'chol hadeis. So that's why, practically speaking, even though the Gemara and Sadei Zayin points out the Mishnayos are full of kafela, b'no sein tam means really you ought to taste it, but for Ashkenazim this. Practically speaking, is a non-entity. And again, as I said before, not Chas V'Shalom were more machmer than the Amoraim. It was kosher Amoraim, Avad is kosher for us. We're just not sure how the Amoraim do it. They knew. They knew whether they were following Rashi or Tosfos. But we don't know. So because we're not sure how to do it, we're not sure whether to tell the Nachri in advance or not tell the Nachri in advance. So that's why, practically speaking, Ashkenazim dispense with kafela and always jump straight to bittul b'shishim. So that's going to that's the practical implementation of Tom Kikar. So Baruch Hashem, this evening we already laid out a number of the yisodos. We had a chance to think about the fact that it is a div of Tom Kikar, and that's again a discussion psachim and others elsewhere. Where does it come from? A machlokas rishonim recorded in Sadi Chesiv Beis. Whether when all the dust settles, is it Daraisa or is it Rabbanan? If it is Daraisa, is it actually, is that Drasha Megala, this is fully a part of whatever the particular law is? It's a violation of the Isser of a Chazir, of Basbachal, whatever it is. Or it's an added, more general, lower level than Isser Kalali of a Tom Ke'ikr. And in terms of the practicality, so we're already beginning to see a couple of the practical aspects of Tom Ke'ikr as well. One is that there has to be an engine, there has to be some force driving the Tom transfer, and it's going to matter. We're going to differentiate not just between where there is an engine such as heat or salt and where there isn't, but even between the various scenarios, sometimes the force will drive the flavor very far. Sometimes it's driving to the first klipa or the first netila. And then we're going to have to think about assessing, once you figure out how far it spread, then you have to figure out how you go about assessing shishim. And these are some of the issues that we're going to begin to develop further as we, Mirtz Hashem, move forward into Simin Tzadi Aleph. Rabbi Osa, thank you so much.